Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, this is Joseph Silverswag and Grant Bagby coming to you with a new episode of... Okay, we should be merged. Let me just do this now.
You're listening to You Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Providing unbiased opinions on all things UW football and basketball.
All right, welcome to this episode of You Talk. This is Grant Bagby. I'm joined today by my normal co-host, Joseph Silverswag.
Everybody,
if you didn't know, Joseph is now taking his writing statistical analysis to Ute Nation, which is the rival site covering the Ute. And after some marital discord and some counseling, we're getting the podcast back together.
So it's good to have the wife helping out, huh?
I mean, what's crazy, I mean, we haven't done this in a while, but there is quite a bit to talk about with Utah football season ending and the news that's dropped within the last 3 or 4 days, plus Utah basketball. We're finally in basketball conference play, so there's plenty to talk about. So to lead into the first thing we're going to talk about is the lovely signing of Taylor as the offensive coordinator. Now, I know a lot of fans I've seen some fans that are underwhelmed in the sense they wanted us to go land Chip Kelly as OC. I've also seen fans that are super excited, maybe are expecting a little too much. They're all over the spectrum, but whenever I think of the new offensive coordinator in this offense, I just see his face with a halo over it because he's going to come in and save Utah.
Save us all,
so,
yes.
So what do you got as far as what we should expect from Mr. Taylor and the future of the Utah offense, Joseph?
Well, I think this is about as good a hire as Utah could have made. I mean, the first thing to remind everybody is that the Utes have a budget, and there's probably about $800,000 available for 3 coaching positions because the NCAA added a 10th assistant coach. And the giant names that people were talking about, apart from Utah just not being the kind of prestige job they'd be looking for, just pure economics, you can't afford Chip Kelly. He's going to want, you know, over $1 million to coach whoever he coaches, and maybe considerably more than that. So you had to look for, rather than the last big thing, the Utes had to hire the next big thing. They had to find a guy who was a quarterback whisperer. They had to find a guy who could direct a spread offense and not be a huge change to the offense. The Utes have really good personnel in place to run a spread, run first, re-option offense like you see running the most similar offense to the Utes offense is probably over at Clemson, but there's a lot of offenses that are similar, like Louisville runs a spread for the read option, and it's a pretty common offense that you see. So we needed somebody who could run that. We didn't want to change to a pro style, which would require new quarterbacks, new receivers, new running backs, new linemen, and we didn't want to change to what some people think we got, which is an air raid, which is a totally different structure and requires a different sort of quarterback and different types of receivers and in particular, a lack of tight ends. And that's exactly what we got. Troy Taylor is the next big thing. He was Jake Browning's coach in high school, and he did a bang-up job with him. And then he was... For a year, he was the coach over at Eastern Washington. I don't know how familiar our listeners are with the FCS teams, but Eastern Washington is really an elite program. it's as good of an FCS program as you get. They've knocked off or held close some really good FBS teams. They beat Washington State this year. Washington State, that turned out to be one of, I think, only three or four losses for them. So they're a heck of a team, and they deserve a lot of respect. It's not an FCS team; it's the FCS team. And he's really, really what you wanted. I had my eye on a couple of guys from the FBS ranks. The quarterbacks coach over at Southern Florida was somebody who stood out to me. But this is that kind of guy. I mean, he's known as a brilliant coaching mind. And there's no reason to expect that not to continue. I mean, if you're hoping for a hire that could be a real slam dunk, that could make a huge change in the way the offense runs, this is it. This is as good as you could have hoped for.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we were talking earlier, like when the football season was actually happening. I mean, actually, it might have been after the last regular season game against Colorado. I said that, you know, what I would expect to see is Harding to take over as OC, and let's get in someone who can truly be a quarterback coach and hopefully coach this get a quarterback that will actually develop and improve through the season and then throughout their college career at Utah. And I feel like this is just as good as that. I mean, we've got Harding,
it's that guy,
staying on the team, and, you know, assistant head coach. I'm not sure exactly what an assistant head coach does, but it is a promotion, and he'll be with the team. We'll still be able to recruit. The offensive line will still be amazing. That's my expectation with the Harding coached offensive line. And now we have someone that, you know, has coached quarterbacks, just like you mentioned with Browning. He's played quarterback. I mean, this guy broke records at Cal, played a couple years in the NFL.
Right, Jared Goff broke his records. He's a recent star, relatively recent star at Cal. He was a heck of a player for the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, I think this hire, just like you said, I think this is as good as it could have gotten as far as a hire for the Utah offensive staff. Now, the interesting thing to see is who are we going to get in the running back coaching spot, because I know there are some recruits that are looking at that, wondering what's going to happen. A couple of running back recruits that might care to see what happens with that. And so, I mean, that's kind of the wait-and-see game we're at now as far as coaching hires.
I think they're going to move fast because we're expecting – the Utes are heavily recruiting Eno Benjamin, who is a truly elite Texas running back, four-star, close to five-star prospect, does everything really, really well. The Utes have never quite been leading for his services. They've been sort of running a close second to Arizona State. And then Texas offered Layton, since he's from Texas. That's a concern as well. And he cooled on the Utes a little bit when they let Roderick go, just because he didn't know what the offense was going to be. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Utes make an announcement sooner rather than later, provided they've got the guy that they want. In an effort to have somebody who can talk to him and say, hey, here's what we're going to be doing with that. The obvious choice for that would be Fred Whittingham, moving him over from tight ends to running backs. He played running back in college, and you keep hearing his name kind of bounced around as maybe the next running backs coach. And that would be an easy hire to make right now that you could announce and give you know, somebody to think of, somebody to talk to. The other name that I keep hearing, though, is Quentin Gamper, who was a running back for the Utes a few years ago, some great highlights against BYU, played a little bit in the NFL and you know, acquitted himself well at that level and has been coaching now for a little bit. Would be another, I think he's down at Weber, would be another strong hire for the Utes. I just wonder if they can make that hire fast enough that it can impact recruiting this year. I'm not sure if you want to go out of your way to try and get, you know, Benjamin, whether or not he'd even commit anyway is sort of an open question. I don't know why these guys go to ASU, but they do. So,
yeah, go enjoy ASU.
Yeah. They haven't had a thousand. They haven't had a 1,000-yard running back in, I don't know, 6 years, 7 years. But yeah. I don't know what they do on their official visits, but it works because ASU lands some pretty darn good recruits.
Yeah.
So that's what I would expect. I would expect they're either going to hire Fred Whittingham in the next couple of days, or we'll wait and it'll wind up being Quinton Ganter. The other nice thing about moving Fred Whittingham over to running backs is that you have a tight end position open, which is a passing game position, and you could let Troy Taylor make a hire at that spot, and that way
right.
you could feel a little bit like he's got, you know, a dog in the fight, so to speak.
So well, it does seem, based on Taylor's interview with Bill Riley, that he's still leaving Witt really to the hiring, but, I mean, we'll see if that holds true or what he does on that front. But
I think that's true, but he's going to – it would be a nice thing to do, you know, to let him have at least one guy. So maybe we'll just have to see.
Yeah, so other big news is the youth heading to the NFL early. We've got Bowles just announced yesterday that he'll be heading to the NFL. Marcus Williams recently announced that he'll be heading to the NFL. And these are some pretty big playmakers for the youth. I mean, what do you think, first, of their decisions to go pro, and two, how do the youth fill their shoes?
Well, Marcus Williams was the no-brainer. He had a really good year this year. He got a lot of interceptions, which even for a ballpark like this isn't a sure thing in any given year. And safety and DB is such a short position that every year you're kind of costing yourself a year of salary, because you're going to get slower when you get into your late 20s. And once you get slower, you're done. And then the other issue is that an injury to your legs can be so impactful to your long-term ability that you want to get yourself drafted kind of in as few games as possible so that you don't run the risk of somebody taking out your knee or your leg.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think Marcus Williams is a no-brainer. I think fans that were hoping he would stay or had a prayer that he would stay were a little too hopeful. And, I mean, I think the writing was on the wall from the beginning of the season that this is probably going to be Marcus's last season as a youth.
It makes sense for him. And then as far as Bowles, when he got a couple of scouts came back to him in the last week with first and second round grades. And when that happened, there's just no reason to stay. There's no upside. You got to think of it sort of as a percent return on investment. So if he's going to make $2 or $3 million if he goes this year, even if he were to get drafted, you know, in the top 10 and make five, it's still only a 50% return on his investment, and he's losing a year of salary, and he's taking a big risk about hurting himself or just having a bad year and not getting there. I think he probably is likely a late first, early second round pick, but there are some GMs out there who have not been shy about saying that he is the best tackle prospect in the draft and the first tackle on their board, and if he has a good combine and does what he's supposed to do there, it's not out of the realm that he gets a high first-round pick. And there's just no upside to him for staying in terms of the, you know, kind of financial analysis. He doesn't have anywhere to go but down. So he'd have been silly to stay, which isn't to say that there isn't stuff for him to work on. He's not a perfect player. But it's a weak draft to tackle. He's one of the best, if not the best, tackles in the draft. You just expect him to go.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I mean, ultimately, that's a year of millions of dollars. I mean, I would do that. I would make the exact same decision. If it were my kid, I would advise him to make the same decision. I just don't think there's any surprise. So now let's talk about the much harder question, which is more pertinent. How do the youth fill in these high-talented caliber players?
The good news is that the Utes seem to have already known that this was going to happen. They have already picked up a commitment from a, I think he's in Texas, a junior college safety, Karian Ballard, who is every bit as talented as Marcus Williams. And I think there's always going to be a drop-off. But he's a really, really good player. I don't think that Fogle will be starting. I think it'll be Ballard who will be starting. Tackle is harder. Tackle's a tough position to recruit. The Utes do have tackles on the roster. I think that people aren't talking enough about Darren Paulo. He didn't have a standout year this year, but he was playing behind three NFL-caliber offensive tackles. So he was backing up a guard. But I think moving him out to tackle makes a lot of sense. Barton was really, really good, and I think will continue to be really, really good. The harder thing for me to see getting filled right away is actually Isaac Asiata. He was a really special player at left guard, and the Utes offense really ran through him and his ability to pull block and his athleticism and ability to get up the field. He was an AP All-Bowl selection this year. He's just been an amazing player for the Utes, and kind of a special blend of size and athleticism that I think is going to be hard for them to replace. They've got guys on the roster, but they're just not experienced enough. So really it's going to be on Troy Taylor to find a new way to run the same offense through a different part of the line. I mean, we ran our whole offense through the left side of the line last year, and that's because we had, you know, arguably the best left tackle and the best left guard in the Pac-12 last year. So of course that's what we ran our offense through. And now it's on Taylor to take a look at the talent we have and figure out if he's going to have to call less runs and more screens or more passes beyond the line of scrimmage, or if he's going to have to run the running game through a different part of the line.
Ultimately, between Harding and Taylor, I'm actually not all that concerned. I mean, Bowles is, yes, a huge loss, but I think they can fill him in. And like you mentioned, they've already got a JC recruit coming in at safety. And as much as you're projecting Fogle, you're saying Fogle won't start, the fact is Fogle came in and filled in just fine for Marcus.
And he could start. If he was the starter, we'd be fine. Yeah, he's not a bad player. He performed well.
Yeah, I think we're fine in those positions. But I at the turnover for the key spots, we're losing. I feel like we're pretty well set up as far as talent goes for next year. The hard part is we just have to make it through the off season to get to the point where we can actually, you know, talk about hypothetical football. You know what I'm saying?
We're gonna have to talk a lot about recruiting and what might happen. And yeah, we're gonna do our best BYU fan impression for the next 6 months and just talk about imaginary football.
I don't know, but either way,
and you've got basketball to talk about, and basketball's exciting, right? I mean, it's not, you know, top 25 exciting, but it's exciting times.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we got the youth. We've talked about it already, but it's pretty much a brand new basketball team with 10 new faces on this team. And the Bearfield and Collette finally started to play with the team. So it is, it's like, we did the preseason, a non-conference season, I guess, is more what it's actually called. And we knew that team, and then they added Collette and Bearfield, and now we have this whole new team to analyze. And it's still just a whole bunch of new outside of Bonham and Kuzma. And, I mean, it's really hard to gauge what this team is going to be capable of doing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always talking about numbers, and the truth is that from a statistical perspective, I got nothing. The Utes have played six, seven games, I think, maybe even less than that with these new guys. One of them was with a core piece out with an ankle injury. There's just a lot that we don't know about this team, and their statistical returns over the last little while are such a small sample size and against such bad competition that we just don't know, and we just don't have information.
I don't want to hear this small sample size.
Well, that's why it's nice to have your eyeballs. You can watch a couple of games, and you can have a pretty good idea about what's going on. But what I try and use stats for is to sort of illuminate things that you maybe can't see with your eyes, and then to check what you're seeing and say, well, is it really true? Is what we think we're seeing really happening? And that's not really something that you can do this year, just because there's not a lot of games, there's not a lot of possessions. But the sample that we have is really exciting. I mean, they took it to Colorado. They whooped them, and they did exactly what they needed to do. They held that shooting percentage down. I think they shot 40% from two. So they looked great, but because the out-of-conference schedule was so weak, they're going to need to find some big-time wins here in conference play if they want to have the ability to make any case at all for getting to the tournament this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of the unfortunate thing, is I think this team may be better than expected. I think they are, at least will be better than expected. Yet, because of the non-conference schedule strength, I kind of, like you're saying, see it as a hard route to travel to get to getting in the tournament. And it's going to be a wait-and-see game. I mean, they're really going to be dependent on John doing some pretty special things during the Pac-12 regular season and then in the Pac-12 tournament. I just don't know if they're going to be able to do enough.
Well, the problem you have is that there's not a lot of pretty good teams or even, you know, very good teams in the Pac-12. What you have is you've got about, seven good teams, pretty good, not great, but pretty good, like Colorado and Utah. And then you've got three great teams. I mean, they're going to be high seeds. They're going to be competing for Sweet 16 and beyond spots in the tournament. UCLA, Oregon, and Arizona are really good, and they're going to be really hard to beat, even at home. And then you've got Oregon State and Washington, who are just dogs, and beating them doesn't get you anywhere. So it's hard to see where the Utes are going to get those quality RPI wins, because three of the teams that they're going to be playing, they'll be lucky to win two of those games this year.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, based on that, I mean, let's just talk. They have the first big opportunity today, actually.
For sure.
And playing Arizona. And what, I mean, it's kind of an interesting matchup because of Markkanen, I believe is the way you pronounce his name, who was apparently pretty close to potentially choosing the Utes last offseason. But what do you see in this Arizona game?
I mean, Arizona is a really highly ranked team, and they're really highly rated by sort of the generic metrics. But when you dig into their numbers, there's a lot of sort of suspect stuff. And it stems from, I don't know if it's an inability or an unwillingness to shoot threes. They've got a decent three-point percentage. They hit about 38% of their threes, but they don't shoot very many of them. They've shot a little bit less than 250, you know, over the course of the season. And because of that, efficiency numbers on offense just aren't that good. So even though they look like a good offense kind of on paper, the efficiency numbers make me wonder that if you can just lock down the paint a little bit and make them work just a little bit harder to hit those inside shots, because of their unwillingness to go for three-pointers, they might have trouble scoring against a particularly better interior team. And I think that the Utes are actually fairly well positioned to give them a tough game, because we've got, particularly on defense, good bigs. But given that this game is on the road, I think it's a tough road to hoe. And because it's so
early. They've only had a few games to gel. I think if this game were in a week or two, I might be more hopeful. But right now, I've got my doubts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I want it to happen. I don't see it happening. But I think it'll be a close one. I think you fans will come away from the game, maybe even with a loss, but they'll feel pretty good about the team and definitely the future of the team as we go through the season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a betting man, but I find that 11-point spread that we've got right now to be a pretty tempting number. I feel like the Utes are a little better than they're being given credit for right now, and we've got a shot of keeping this one close enough that we're fouling people at the end of the game and not just hanging on to the ball.
Okay, so you guys heard it here. Joseph is telling you to go bet on for the Utes to come.
No, don't do that. I'm not that guy. I will never be that guy. I don't have enough confidence, and I hate gambling, so don't do that. But I think that Vegas, in their standing as experts, are being a little hard on the Utes right now.
Yeah, well, I think it goes back to our small sample size and not knowing what the Utes really are right now. And I don't know.
There's a tremendous amount of uncertainty right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Well, do you have any closing thoughts for us, Joseph?
Yeah, I wanted to touch on a little bit the Andy Phillips and Tom Hackett podcast, where they talked about the Utes getting overworked, not being allowed to recover enough. And I guess there isn't too much to say about it. I think it's a worthwhile listen for a Ute fan, but just to remember to take it with a grain of salt and consider that you're only hearing one side of the story here, and you need to have everybody's perspective on it. And I'd love to hear the perspective, and I don't want to be, you know, guy all the time, but I want to hear the perspective of some position players. I get that the punter and the kicker don't like the workout schedule, but maybe a guy who's more used to it might find it to be less draining. So I'm curious to hear what Garrett Bowles has to say about it, and he's got some interviews coming on. Maybe somebody will ask him.
Yeah, no, it is an interesting thing. I agree with you to take it with somewhat of a grain of salt. The one thing that I found funny that kind of cracked me up about the whole thing was the fact that they brought up that Whittingham will go to their leadership council and ask if they have any changes they would like to see made or whatnot, and how no one really stands up to Whit. And it's kind of like, I don't blame them either. Like, you know, if you did have one of those recommendations, you know, do you really want to come off to your coach that you're looking for potentially less work or something? So I think there's the thing. What ultimately it does support, though, is that there are things that the youth could tweak, things that the youth could change to potentially improve their November record. Because, I mean, it's a proven thing that Whittingham's process, especially since joining the Pac-12, has been this same kind of process that by November time, the best the Utes are going to do is about 500. I mean,
they seem pretty burned out, and they play a little differently too.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's plenty of years of a sample size to be able to say that there is consistently there's something going on, and there's always little things that can be tweaked. And as much as we love changing the offensive coordinator, that's clearly part of the Utah football program is changing the offensive coordinator.
It's a tradition.
It is tradition now. So I expect in 2 years we'll be changing it again. But the point is that, you know, maybe that's not the thing we should change. Maybe there's maybe some little tweaks that maybe Hackett and Phillips brought up on their podcast that, you know, should definitely be warranted. And ultimately, I think the one thing I think that really that stood out to me is that as much as the players are supposedly getting an opportunity to mention these things, it's not exactly in a way that a player would really want to do it. Does that make sense? So
yeah, I think that you can make too much out of a leadership council or something like that, because the politics of a head coach are so inescapable, and Kyle Whittingham in particular has such a forceful personality. It's hard to imagine a 20-year-old kid who's, you know, 20-something-year-old kid whose whole life for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years
has been just yes, sir, whatever you want, sir, to Kyle Whittingham, saying, oh, you know what, maybe we should work out less. It's just hard to see how they can broach that subject without without losing some of their standing, either in the eyes of Whittingham or even in the eyes of their player peers.
Yeah, I agree that the leadership council, sometimes leadership councils or membership councils or things are really powerful instruments for change, and sometimes there are ways to make people feel like they have a voice when the structure doesn't really allow them to actually have much of an impact. And sometimes that can be intentional. Sometimes it can sort of be an accidental component of things. And I can't say with any certainty what we've got going on here, but it doesn't seem like it's a particularly effective tool for the players to get their voices heard if they don't feel like they can talk about something like this.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I'm intrigued to see if they brought it out in the public domain where it hasn't been previously. I'm intrigued to see if there's any, true change now because of it, or, because I think there is definitely going to be questions, next time there's media availability with Whittingham and other players, like you mentioned with Bulls and everything, what comes of it now that it is more in public domain than it has been. And I especially am super, like, I bring up other things, like, I was surprised they brought up, Corey Butler-Bird and Damo's reasons for not playing in the bowl game type stuff.
I didn't know if that was the best move on their part. I might have just kept that to myself.
Yeah. I mean,
that was a little odd.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's really interesting the stuff that they came out public. And I mean, maybe Andy Phillips was just there wanting to, prove his thing, saying, "Hey, I'm not connected with the U anymore." Boom, boom, boom. Gloves are off. Let's do this. And he came out swinging. But I thought, it's definitely something that Utah fans should listen to. Very interesting. I'm intrigued to see what happens now going forward based off of the things that they brought to light. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think players should be willing to criticize, but to lose the goodwill that you have that you've built up from being a player, there's a radio personality who's working hard to lose all of the goodwill that he built up as a Utah player as quickly as possible, and it's going to make it harder for him to do his job well, because he's going to lose his relationships with the coaching staff. So there's a balance to be made. He certainly can criticize, but there's a way to kind of walk that line, I think, where you're not ruffling feathers or hurting feelings, and that's a challenging puzzle for anybody to figure out early in their career.
Yeah, too. Well, hopefully everyone gets to enjoy a competitive and potential upset win by the youth tonight as they
absolutely
play Arizona. And hopefully we'll have a running back coach here soon, and we'll plan on talking some recruiting and talking some more Utah basketball next week.
Awesome. Sounds good. Talk to you next week.
All right. Go Utes.
Go Utes.